flames. At least 30 bodies are reported to have already washed up on the nearby beach. The Boeing plane was on its way to Beirut. British scientists have finished those tests on the suspected BSE-infected cow from America. They say they know the results, but it's up to US officials when that information and if that information is released to the public. Samples were sent here thanks to our knowledge of the disease. Pakistan's president is blaming terrorists for today's attempt on his life, the second in 11 days. Pervez Musharraf escaped unhurt after his motorcade was attacked by suicide bombers, but 14 people were killed. The Queen has praised the efforts of the armed forces in Iraq in her Christmas Day message to the Commonwealth. She spoke of their teamwork and said it set an example to us all. The message was delivered from barracks near Windsor.
I was left with a deep sense of respect and admiration for their steadfast loyalty to each other and to our nation. I believe there is a lesson for us all here. It is that each of us can achieve much more if we work together as members of a team.
Meanwhile, the Pope and the Archbishop of Canterbury have used their Christmas messages to warn of the threat of international terrorism and to call for more understanding between faiths to bring it to an end. Now, scientists have everything crossed as they wait for a signal from Britain's Mars probe. Beagle 2's travelled millions of miles to search for signs of life on the red planet, but so far it's failed to say whether it's landed okay. It's hoped it'll finally make contact around 10 o'clock tonight. Flight Operations Director Alan Smith.
This time the Beagle will switch on its transmitter and the radio telescope in Jodrell Bank near Manchester will search for the signal for about half an hour tonight.
Fingers crossed for everyone at the Camden Mission HQ. Also, if you've been wondering how they've been celebrating Christmas down under, well, they've been popping on their cozzies, funny enough, and heading down to Bondi Beach, replacing roast turkeys with roast back sides in the soaring 30-degree temperatures. Of course, turkeys are out anywhere, so you crawl out of the warm waves, it's straight to the barbie. London's weather here, though, mild and cloudy tonight, with rain on its way tomorrow after a reasonably dry start. Temperatures dropping down tonight to about 10 degrees in Soho at the moment. We've got 10 degrees. LBC 97.3 weather for London, with Well Woman Capsules, intelligent nutrition for the demands of modern life. It's 6.03.
You'll want to be up for it.
Nick Ferrari's on the move.
Now, remember what's happening in January?
Yes, I do.
You're going to be with me?
Absolutely. Only if you send me a car sticker, though.
Well, what if you do that, what will you do? Will you have the bedside alarm set to me, the radio clock?
It already is. Yes, I wake up with you.
Snap, crackle and Nick? From 7am on Monday, the 5th of January, Nick Ferrari on LBC 97.3. Tuned in to London.
Sometimes businesses are so anxious to give out something extra, they're not thinking about what they give you. Like, buy 9 coffees, get the 10th one free. Maybe it's just me, but if you're slamming back 9 steaming cups of jet black jet fuel, then the last thing you probably need is one more. It should be something like, buy 9 coffees, get a free horse tranquilizer. But Orange gives you extra you can actually use. If you join Orange Pay Monthly on your plan 120 or above by the end of the year, we'll give you an extra 2,000 free texts, which is handy. Because you'll have a lot to say after 10 double espressos. It's only fair. Think about it. Visit your nearest Orange stockist for details. Texts must be used within 6 months from connection. Minimum term contract and conditions apply.
LBC. 30 years in the making.
LBC!
I'm Howard Hughes, and I'd like to take you back 30 years to 1973.
1973.
Every little boy dreams of riding a chopper, now the best-selling bicycle in Britain.
Top White House aides have been arrested following the Watergate scandal.
Royal Highness Princess Anne smiles at the crowd gathered to celebrate her marriage to Captain Mark Phipps.
This year's blockbuster film must surely be Live and Let Die.
Good evening. We've got an action-packed evening for you tonight on Thames.
There can be no whitewash at the White House.
Yes, 1973. You're doing 30 in your new Austin Allegro on an early morning trip to Woolwich. Your husband is working on that new Thames Barrier. Isn't that one of those new pocket calculators there on the seat beside you? The Sinclair Cambridge, if I'm not mistaken. It's a chilly autumn morning, the 8th of October to be precise, just before 6 o'clock, and you turn on your new VHF FM radio.
After the news, farming. Today, the panel are discussing muck spreading.
Not much there, is there? You tune up the dial a bit, and this, my friends, is where our story begins.
This is London Broadcasting, the news and information voice of Independent Radio. Welcome to LBC at 6 o'clock, October the 8th. My name's David Jessel, this is The Morning Show, and here's the news.
And the news was that Britain's first independent local radio station was on air. The idea for LBC came from Sir Christopher Chataway. Back in 1973, he was the Minister for Posts and Telecommunications.
I went to the United States to have a look at commercial radio. I mean, I thought that I ought to do, to see if there are any ideas. And the one thing that did impress me a lot at the time was were the all-news stations in New York and Washington.
WINS has become the first and only radio station in the New York region to present a continuing all-news service.
From that came the idea of LBC and of IRN.
But behind the scenes on that day, David Jessel.
There is a scurrilous rumour put around, I think largely by me, that I was physically sick just a few seconds before making that momentous announcement. If I wasn't, I should have been. It was so terrifying. You just knew disaster was looming.
The time is 6 o'clock. Good evening. This is John Snow with the news. I'm sorry, the time is 6:30, and this is John Snow with the local news, but first, look at the headlines. 5:30, I'm sorry, it's a very confusing clock on the wall here.
So the breakfast show was a disaster, but surely it had to get better, right?
Welcome back to 2 in the morning, and a cold, almost chilly but lovely sunny morning it is here in London.
I thought you were looking rather goose-pimply this morning.
Yeah, it was very goose-pimply. Very goose-pimply weather.
The first female voice to be heard on LBC, Janet Street Porter. A great face for radio, but what a voice.
There was a story in the paper that Myra has been accepted at the Open University.
What was going on? LBC presenter 30 years ago, Nigel Rees.
It was absolutely disastrous at the beginning. I mean, it's now ancient history when he's talking about people who have long ago moved away. I was very excited at the prospect of LBC starting, because I thought there was a chance of doing news and current affairs broadcasting in a new way. And I invented this wonderful word, a news disc jockey. I said, what do you want is a news disc jockey? You know, somebody who could really introduce the news like a disc jockey would. But that didn't seem to happen. I think the basic problem in the early days was that the station was run by newspaper people who didn't know really what all these newfangled things called microphones were. And we had some terrible problems.
Hunt is on for those responsible for a terror bombing in London, which has killed one man and injured 20 other people, two of them children.
Well, we've got to the first afternoon of LBC. Remember, it's 1973, so it must be about time to entertain all those ladies at home with nothing more to do than make cottage pie for their husbands in between reading Woman's Own.
London Broadcasting is 2:10. Welcome to At Home. My name is Belle Mooney. With me in the studio is Steve Merrick, and
hello.
He is indeed 5 days a week sitting there loyally while
say it like that.
Gillian Strickland and I swap over and go off shopping, but Steve's here 5 days a week, and I'm here today, and Gillian...
That's very exciting, because I've never done any radio before. So when I was, as it were, headhunted or whatever happened to me to come on it, and it was the first commercial, it was exciting, you know, I thought, yeah, I'd be part of something. But I was pregnant, and it was... my doctor said, you must be mad. And I knew I was mad, but I wanted to have a go, you see. But, I mean, it was incredibly stressful. Because, you see, half the time your guests didn't turn up, because it was in Gough Square, which, as some listeners will know, is sort of behind the old Fleet Street, but nobody knew where it was. And anyway, you couldn't get guests. All this dead air time. So I used to go into the studio with women's magazine articles. I worked for a magazine called Nova before that. And I'd take in magazine articles I'd written about contraception or whatever kind of stuff, and I would just burble from my piece, you know, and facts and figures, and just making up a feature, ad-libbing, because the guest hadn't shown up. And, gosh, it was very, very stressful. And people were sort of fainting and screaming in the corridors. You know, it was just nightmarish.
And what about those big-name guests in 1973?
Harry Corbett, of Sooty fame, came into the studio on my funny little programme. And if you think about it, there's a glove puppet, there's a silent creature. He's a puppet, but he's a television puppet, isn't he? Because you can't see him. And I kept saying, now, children, Sooty is really in the studio. He is here. You can't see it. You know, this is silent. And Harry Corbett's waving the Sooty around.
Hello, Sooty.
Hello, hello, indeed. Hello to you all. Yes, I'm Sooty's daddy. Sooty's got black ears. He's a little teddy bear, but I'm Sooty's daddy. And there's Sooty's mummy here because she's... Sue's mummy as well. And,
by day two, things had got worse. Most of the advertisers had deserted the station. In the coming months, there were calls in Parliament to have LBC closed down. But to the rescue, broadcaster Adrian Love, who sadly died a few years ago but left us a lot to remember.
I came in here at the suggestion of a friend of mine who had come in on day one as a newsreader. A guy called Paul Ingrams phoned me up and said, get down here, son. Place is full of people from Fleet Street who were saying things like, what's that funny black thing? It's a microphone. Oh, is it? Oh, gosh. And he phoned me up and he said, get down here and have a chat. And they offered me an 8-hour phone-in show without an audition. So I started doing Nightline, the original 10 at night till 6 in the morning, open your eyes with matchsticks job. And it was my first time doing talk radio, and it was fascinating.
Time to call in the cavalry, and they came from the BBC. Radio 4 Today editor Marshall Stewart jumped ship to man the pumps on the rapidly sinking SSLBC.
The immediate impressions that I had was one of enormous confusion, a good deal of disorganisation, but interestingly enough, a very strong sense of enthusiasm and energy and commitment from the start. I think to a certain extent they operated in the way that they knew best, and that for many of them was based on newspaper technology, newspaper styles, and that was one of the fundamentals that had to be changed. So in a sense one began from the beginning to try to create a format which would be attractive to the listeners, and which would also accommodate, of course, breaking news and 24 hours of news. It gave suddenly London, and also set the style for the UK, the opportunity for news to be broken immediately when it was important.
Marshall brought with him the man who became the voice of commercial radio, Douglas Cameron.
I'd worked with Marshall Stewart, one of the greatest bosses I ever had, on the Radio 4 Today programme for nearly 5 years. And when he left for LBC, he said to me, do you fancy coming over to present the breakfast show? And I said to him, do you think the station's got a future? I'm not so sure. And he said to me, with people like you on board, it has. And I'll get them. And he did. And 29 and a half years later, I'm still here.
Marshall also got big names like David Frost to do a phone-in. Even a recently resigned Prime Minister got his own show.
Music is all pervasive. It permeates almost every aspect of our daily lives. Perhaps the extent to which this is so isn't fully
recognized. Edward Heath hosting a classical music program for LBC.
30 years in the making.
Still to come, the phone-in comes of age.
Morris from Ealing.
Good morning, Brian. There's an American expression...
Oh, just a moment. Did you write me a letter recently?
I wrote you a letter.
You wrote me an offensive letter, didn't you?
I don't think it was offensive.
It was downright offensive, and you're not going to speak on the programme until you apologise.
And more storm clouds gather.
It's 9 o'clock. I'm Jonathan Staples. LBC has lost its licence to broadcast to London.
LBC. 30 years in the making.
LBC!
You'll want to be up for it. A new time for Nick Ferrari in the new year.
I'm Mark Rhodes. I'll be getting up at 7 a.m. to have a pop at my breakfast idol, Nick Ferrari. Tune in to LBC 97.3 every morning from 7 till 10. from January the 5th.
From 7am on Monday the 5th of January, Nick Ferrari on LBC 97.3. Tuned in to London.
LBC, 30 years in the making.
LBC!
I'm Howard Hughes. In 1973, politicians and celebrities had little direct contact with the great unwashed, you and me in other words. If you wanted to know what public opinion was on the issues of the day, you could find it in the letters page of the Times or the London Evening News. LBC was the first radio station in Europe to broadcast the open line phone-in, where listeners were encouraged to have a point of view and not be afraid of airing it. The ringmaster of the phone-in, Brian Hayes.
What I wanted to bring to LBC when I came was a bit of conflict in phone-ins. There tended to be a kind of an agreement that a caller would say, I think this, and then the presenter might say they disagreed, but they'd say it in a very well-mannered way. So conflict came to the phone-in.
At the heart of the LBC Day, now hosted by award-winning Nick Ferrari.
What we try and do now is have conversations as you would in a coffee shop or a restaurant in a pub, and hopefully I'm the sort of person who you would want to sit down and have a cup of coffee with rather than run out the door. And also we share, we tell stories. And that's what it's about. So it wouldn't matter whether it's some appalling lack of sense by the government, or they've overspent in an area, or it's simply down to the price of fish. We can ring in and we talk about it together.
Our daytime phone-ins are very different from the ones you hear at night or at the weekend. Grand Wizard of the Twilight Zone, Clive Ball.
I think what people remember, and it sums it up quite well, are the famous names who phoned in. Although we didn't realise at the time, Michael Barrymore called in. He talks about it now. He admits it happily that he phoned in our phone-in talent show, did an impersonation of himself, and came seventh out of ten. And then there was Peter Cook, who fitted in perfectly with his character, Sven, the Norwegian fisherman, but Sven from Swiss Cottage, he called himself. The thing that originally made him call in was that he said that he loved the show because it was so refreshing, because in Norway, all the phone-ins were about fish. It was just fish, fish, fish all the time.
Oh, hello, Mr. Bull.
Hello, Sven.
Yes, I'm only a visitor here from Norway, and I listen to the program and think one wonderful thing is because in Norway, the phone-in is mainly devoted to subjects of, you know, that like fish. And it's so nice to come to this country and hear people talking about, the, you know, parliament and taking clothes off and singing. In Norway, all we get is this fish stuff going on and on.
In the 1970s, before he became a name on TV, Jeremy Beadle hosted a weekend late-night phone-in.
I used to do a lot of practical jokes, and I don't mean wind-up phone calls. I actually did hoaxes, and there is quite a big difference. I, for example, invented the left ear hoax, which I convinced the public that in the same way that we are left and right-handed, we're left and right-eared. How did we do that? I said to the listeners, now, I want you to listen to my voice very carefully. I want you to cover one ear. Now, cover one ear and listen to my voice. Take away your finger, and now I want you to cover your other ear. At which point I just got closer to the microphone and I just said, now listen to me. Whichever ear you're hearing more clearly with, that is your dominant ear.
Phone-ins are always live, unpredictable, and sometimes go just ever so slightly astray.
Daphne in Wimbledon is on the line. Go ahead, Daphne. Let's move to Harry in Shepherd's Bush. I think a point about disarmament, Harry. Hello, Harry? Have we got Harry there?
Pardon?
No, it's Pat, is it?
Sorry, you must have the wrong number.
Oh, goodness me. these things happen. Well, the telephone system...
LBC's Richard Dallin manfully dealing with the unexpected. You'll hear precious moments like that later when I unlock the LBC bloopers drawer.
This is LBC 97.3 FM, where news comes first.
In a time before Sky News and the World Wide Web, if you wanted news, you had to wait for afternoon theatre to finish before a faintly pompous man in a tie read the news. LBC brought a revolution in news, first to give you the top stories around the clock as they happened. We were the first radio station to have a policy of interrupting normal programs to bring you the latest updates. Back in 1980, the Iranian embassy siege was coming to an end. We were there, live, as the drama came to a climax.
Quick! Come to me! There have just been three explosions which have ripped through the embassy building. Smoke is wafting over the roofs now, and there are gunmen and there are policemen on the balcony, on the just over the doorway. They appear to be going in. That came just a short while. And there's gunfire going. I just heard one shot.
It was about lunchtime on September the 11th, 2001, that we took an urgent call from our New York correspondent, Alan Capper.
When my call came in, I think the feeling was that this was perhaps not a big story, because the producer at the time said, oh, well, that's interesting, I'll come back to you in about half an hour, because clearly the thought was, well, this was a light aeroplane that had crashed into the building, so what? I screamed down the phone and said, no, put me on now, and the producer did put me on, and we had the breaking news story ahead of practically everybody else.
A jet plane, it sounded like, flew over the apartment building that we live in. It sounded very low. It was followed immediately after by a very, very loud explosion. We went to the roof. I can see the World Trade Center now. I think it hit about 20 stories below the very top.
I think it was only at the end of the day, when the LBC broadcasting had stopped, that the full personal enormity hit me, that New York and Washington had been under attack.
It's hard to take courage in a world full of people. You can lose sight of it all in the darkness there inside. Feel so small, but I see your true color shining through. See your true colors. That's why I love you so. Don't be afraid to let them show your true.
Our reporters always go that little bit further to bring you the big stories. Back in 1975, when the Vietnam War was coming to an end, Julian Mannion didn't join the airborne exodus from Saigon. He chose to do his job the hard way and be there to greet the conquering communist army.
Then suddenly from the river end of town came more Viet Cong units, this time in jeeps and trucks with enormous flags waving over the top of them again.
And in 1982... an event that was to put our news-gathering team to the test.
Britain is at war with Argentina over the Falkland Islands. In the House of Commons, Foreign Secretary Lord Carrington has confirmed...
LBC keeps you informed on the Falklands crisis. The big developments as soon as they happen.
And I've just been handed more on the Falklands. The Ministry of Defence...
A Royal Navy ship fired shells during the night at a surface vessel close to the Falklands.
And thoughtful analysis as the options change.
This is a situation the government cannot accept. David Spanier...
It actually made LBC, after all of the struggle over all those years, the way we were able to cover the Falklands War dazzled everybody. No, that sounds like an overstatement, but the BBC was very interested indeed in what we were doing. Mm. And I know one or two people there in fairly high places who were quite envious of the way we did it.
And we did it by posting a reporter in the middle of the action. At Goose Green, as the bullets flew past him, Kim Sabido kept filing his reports.
More incoming gunfire. Some Argentine batteries around Stanley, keeping everybody's heads down. Everything now landing far too close for comfort.
And we had reporters based in General Galtieri's Argentina, giving LBC listeners the other side of the conflict. Phil Longman.
I think the most memorable moment being out there was standing outside the Casa Rosada, the Pink Palace, the President's Palace in Buenos Aires, and tens and tens of thousands of people banging drums and waiting for President Galtieri to come out. The enthusiasm for the war and for the takeover of the Falklands was tremendous. And the disappointment in the country when the British forces took the islands back was extraordinary. And the mood changed overnight when the Belgrano, the battleship, was sunk. And I think the Argentine people knew then that the game was up.
Also brought you stories that have a fairy tale beginning. This, the biggest outside broadcast ever mounted by LBC and our friends at Capital.
As the procession of the bride is about to move in through the west door, she herself is looking very composed, I think, Katie.
And I'm so glad they never swept back that fringe. There was a rumor that they were going to sweep it back, and they haven't. The bridegroom is now flanked by the two supporters, his two supporters, his two brothers.
And as that beautiful music sounds, and indeed it is a musical wedding.
But a decade later, this fairy tale would turn sour.
There were three of us in this marriage, so it was a bit crowded.
And then, tragedy that shook the world.
Diana, Princess of Wales, has died after a car crash in Paris. She was taken to hospital in the early hours of this morning, where surgeons tried for 2 hours to save her life.
Above all, we give thanks for the life of a woman. I'm so proud to be able to call my sister the unique, the complex, the extraordinary and irreplaceable Diana, whose beauty, both internal and external, will never be extinguished from our mind.
And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind.
We were there for the first commercial flight of Concorde.
Fantastic roar, and she's heaving herself off the ground. Up, up she goes.
A symbol of the finest Anglo-French engineering, supersonic flight for the ordinary traveller. Reliable. Invincible.
The plane came down in a field near to a hotel in Gonesse. Airline pilot Sid Hare saw it struggling to gain height.
It was a sickening sight, and when it hit, just a huge fireball.
And this month, British Airways are retiring Concorde from their fleet.
Wake up, Maggie, I think I got something.
Oh, and politics too. We were there for the Cummings.
Her Majesty, the Queen, has asked me to form a new administration.
The Goings.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're leaving Downing Street for the last time.
And the new arrivals.
This new Labour government will govern in the interests of all our people, the whole of this nation.
Tony Blair, now the longest-serving Labour Prime Minister. London stories have always been top of the agenda here at LBC. It was about 7:30 on the night of the 18th of November, 1987. Our reporter, Lindsay Taylor, was travelling home and had just arrived at King's Cross Station. By chance, he had his tape recorder.
As our tube train pulled into King's Cross, passengers were ordered not to get off until the next stop.
We're five yards of passengers over King's Cross, but there was a fire upstairs. There was no exit from the station.
Fire, thought to have been started by a dropped cigarette on an escalator, has now claimed the lives of 31 people.
The King's Cross fire led to the banning of smoking on the London Underground and eventually the removal of all wooden escalators. LBC was the first radio station in Britain to report the news stories first, fast and factually, as they happened. And where we led, others followed. Life, death, good times, bad times. We all expect our radio and TV stations to report the stories immediately. And we've been doing just that for 30 years. Still to come, we take a commercial break.
Way back in 73 when we started, the majority of commercials were taken just straight off TV soundtracks.
I'll be opening the drawer marked bloopers.
Yes, it's 7 o'clock. This is Douglas Cameron. Excuse me.
And the move that brought me to LBC for the first time, the big AM-FM split.
LBC Crown FM, 97.3. News Talk Radio for London.
This is London Talkback Radio, 11:52 AM, 261 metres, medium wave.
LBC, 30 years in the making.
LBC.
Christmas.
LBC 97.3.
Your Boxing Day starts at 7 with Steve Allen. At 9, Nick Ferrari. And then at midday, Sandy Toksvig.
Then at 2, Charlie Jordan will be here with an afternoon of entertainment.
Henry Kelly's here from 5. From 7, Showbiz Central. Then at 10, Bill Buckley with 3 hours of live fun, conversation and entertainment.
Boxing Day on LBC 97.3. Tuned in to London.
This is LBC 97.3, London.
It's 6:30. Good evening, I'm Richard Midson. A man's been charged with the murder of his disabled father in Eastcote in North London. 21-year-old Jonathan Alexander Keane will appear at Uxbridge Magistrates tomorrow morning. Father of four, David, was found stabbed to death early on Sunday at his flat in the town. Another man arrested last night has been released without charge. An airliner has crashed into the Atlantic Ocean. The plane failed to take off properly as it left the runway in the West African nation of Benin. It hit a building and burst into flames. At least 30 bodies are reported to have already been washed up on a nearby beach. The Boeing plane was on its way to Beirut. British scientists have finished their tests on the suspected BSE-infected cow from America. They say they know the results, but it's up to US officials when that information's released to the public. Samples were sent here thanks to our knowledge of the disease. At least 3 people have been killed in a suicide bomb blast in Israel. More than 12 others have been wounded in the explosion in Tel Aviv. Police are blaming Palestinian militants. Well, the Queen has praised the efforts of the armed forces in Iraq in her Christmas Day message to the Commonwealth. She spoke of their teamwork and said it set an example to us all. The message was delivered from barracks near Windsor.
I was left with a deep sense of respect and admiration for their steadfast loyalty to each other and to our nation. I believe there is a lesson for us all here. It is that each of us can achieve much more if we work together as members of a team.
Meanwhile, the Pope and the Archbishop of Canterbury have used their Christmas messages to warn of the threat of international terrorism and to call for more understanding between faiths to bring it to an end. And scientists have everything crossed as they wait for a signal from Britain's Mars probe. Beagle 2 has travelled millions of miles to search for signs of life on the red planet, but so far it's failed to say it's landed okay. It's hoped it'll finally make contact around 10 o'clock tonight. London's weather, mild and cloudy tonight, with rain on its way tomorrow after a dry start. Temperatures dropping down to 10 degrees tonight. And right now in Parliament Square, we've got 10 degrees. LBC 97.3, weather for London with Well Woman capsules. One a day health and vitality for women. It's 6:32.
People all over London are finding a new home at LBC 97.3.
I used to listen to Capital Kiss 100, you know. One of the blokes will start working with me and said, yeah, you should listen to LBC.
LBC 97.3. Tell your friends it's the new place to be in London.
I'm a recent convert to LBC and I love it.
Boxing Day at DFS. It's our biggest ever sale and there's double the sale savings on a huge choice of special offers. Plus, everything slashed in price. From huge sofas to tiny sofas. Sofas with drawers, sofas with studs, leather sofas, reclining chairs, chairs that swivel, chairs that rock, even chairs that vibrate. The list just goes on and on and on and on. Every price is slashed, plus whatever you choose and however huge the savings, everything's free for a year. And there's 3 years free credit on everything too. Follow the leader to the massive double discount sale. That's Boxing Day at DFS. Doors open 9 a.m. at Enfield, Boreham Wood, Croydon, Sidcup, Begton, Romford, South Ruislip, New Malden, Basildon, Watford, Stiles, Stevenage, Maidstone and Tunbridge Wells. From date of order, pay nothing for 12 months, then cash price £3.99 or 24 monthly payments of £16.62. Written details from Bentleymore Lane, Doncaster.
LBC, 30 years in the making.
LBC!
I'm Howard Hughes. Now, I'm going to break a few golden rules of radio now and ask, did you enjoy the commercial break? Sometimes the ads have you in fits of laughter. Sometimes they annoy you. But without them, LBC would sound like this. Because unlike the BBC, ads make the money that keeps LBC on air. So let's take a break.
Your Highnesses, Your Grace, my lords, ladies and gentlemen, be upstanding with the Bird's Eye Company to welcome London Broadcasting.
The first commercial heard on LBC. Now, our pals at Bird's Eye had a pretty good idea of how powerful a medium commercial radio was going to be. Unfortunately, not every LBC advertiser hit the ground running.
Way back in 73 when we started, the majority of commercials were taken just straight off TV soundtracks. Indeed, some advertisers even supplied copy to a radio station on 35mm film and seemed quite upset that we couldn't transmit.
Dave Mason, LBC's advertising traffic manager in 1973. Now, what did the advertising industry make of LBC back then? Douglas MacArthur from the Radio Advertising Bureau.
The advertising industry treated it as a bit of a joke. The strange thing about the advertising business is that it's a very conservative industry. It doesn't like change. It had got its mind round making television commercials, and unusually in Britain, radio commercials came long after television commercials. So the ad business was a bit scared of radio ads and decided to not treat it very seriously, and only a very few advertisers used the medium, and most of those were smaller local advertisers. But here we are today when we've got really important advertisers that now think it's a key part of the schedule.
As Douglas MacArthur says, in 1973, local companies had the opportunity to advertise on the radio.
Ready to eat, get set for a treat, and I'll bet you'll be back for more, more, more. A snack that's just great, or a meal on a plate. Happy Mr. Pizza, smile at Mr. Pizza, have a Mr. Pizza, man.
Now listen to two contrasting commercials. The first should make you laugh.
Morning, Squire.
Morning, sir.
I'd like a video caster, please.
A video recorder. Anyone in particular?
Well, I'd like to have some specifications.
Yes.
And functions. I must have some functions.
I see. Did you have any model in mind?
Well, a friend mentioned the Airy Kiri Kabuki Kasuni Kawachamakali. You know, the Japanese one, the 2000. Because I'm very technically minded, you see.
I can see that.
So I want one with all the bits on it. The Japanese bits, you know, the 2000.
What system?
Electrical, I think. Because I'd like to be able to plug it into the television, you see. I've got a Japanese television.
Have you?
Yeah, I thought you'd be impressed. Yeah, the 2000, the Okie-Kokie 2000.
Well, sir, there is this model.
Yeah, well, it looks smart, yeah.
8 hours per cassette, all the functions that the others have, and I know this will be of interest. A lot of scientific research has gone into making it easy to operate, even by a complete idiot like you.
Yeah, pardon?
It's a Philips.
Doesn't sound very Japanese.
No, a Philips. I mean, a Philips. It's a Philips.
Yeah. Well, it's a 2000, is it?
Oh, in fact, it's the 2022.
No, it hasn't got enough knobs on it, no. What's that one over there?
That's a washing machine.
Yeah, what, so Japanese?
The VR 2022. Video you can understand. From Philips.
Griff Rhys-Jones and Mel Smith. Now, this second commercial will stir a whole range of emotions.
To the best mum in the world. Dear mum. This letter I hoped you'd never receive, because it's just a verification of that terse, black-edged card which you received some time ago. Tomorrow, we go into action. No doubt, lives may be lost. But if this leaves the world a slightly better place, then I'm perfectly willing to make that sacrifice. And if it strengthens your security in any way, then it's worth dying for, too. I loved you, Mum. You are the best mum in the world. Goodbye. Your son.
This letter was written by a young private the night before he died in battle. At the Imperial War Museum, we don't try to glorify the war. We try to give you an idea of what it was like to be part of it. The Imperial War Museum. Part of your family's history.
So powerful. So moving, and just one of the hundreds of thousands of commercials played on LBC over the last 30 years.
LBC!
The people who ran LBC back in 1989 had a cunning plan. Why not drop the name of LBC and sound more like Radio 4? Douglas Cameron.
I was quite frankly appalled when I heard plans to drop the name of LBC from the two networks. Here we had a title which had become a household name for hundreds of thousands of Londoners. We'd built it up for 16 years, and we were going to throw it all away in 16 seconds. The idea was to call the FM station Crown, which everybody thought was the paint company, and the AM service Talkback, with many listeners saying, who's talking back to whom? And as for sounding like Radio 4, we had just gone through a period at LBC where the morning show had more listeners in the London area than the Today programme. So who wants, I argued, to sound like a radio station that people are leaving in droves to listen to you? It was crazy, and I told the management so. But I fear to no avail.
As Private Fraser was apt to say, the whole thing was doomed. Two similar sounding services on medium wave and FM simply split the audience into two. Who could save the day? Well, it was time to call the cavalry in again, and this time they came from further afield than the BBC. Charlie Cox, a former program director from Australia's top-rated 2GB radio, was hired. He brought some big names to the station, like Michael Parkinson and Angela Rippon.
As I turned up at the door, I was met by an absolute mob of newspaper, television and radio reporters and cameras. Because overnight, the story had broken that my husband, Christopher, and I had split up. So there I was turning up for my very first day at LBC to be met by this mob of journalists. And I think that I really remember thinking, what must my new employers think they've taken on? It's not going to be like this every day, I said to them when I arrived.
Also hired from Australia, Mike Carlton, a man with a big reputation down under.
It was one hell of a job getting off the plane at Heathrow straight from Australia and being tossed into the London Lions Den the next day, pretty much. But what a show it was. I worked with some great people, Michael Parkinson, Richard Littlejohn. And the early 90s were a very exciting time. The first Gulf War, Mrs. Thatcher had gone. The government of John Major was crashing in ruin, sleaze galore. It was fun to be there. Part of the fun was that Australians don't treat politicians with all that much deference. I remember Virginia Bottomley, John Major's health secretary. She once arranged for Marks and Spencer to open early so she could shop in private away from the unwashed rabble. And we did the interview, and the first question I asked her was, Mrs. Bottomley, who do you think you are, Princess Margaret? She never quite recovered from that.
With a team of top presenters, the station and LBC's finances never looked better. What could go wrong?
LBC News Talk 97.3 News.
It's 9 o'clock. I'm Jonathan Staples. LBC has lost its license to broadcast to London. The radio authority, which regulates Britain's network of independent stations, has decided not to renew LBC's FM or AM licenses. The authority is not obliged to give a reason for its decision, which has been made public in just the
Frank
last few minutes.
Frank Boff was presenting the morning show on that fateful day.
And that was a quite extraordinary morning, because you got a measure of how people had grown fond of this station, LBC. It was quite extraordinary. And the news broke, and we just turned the phones over to reaction. People would not be put off. All they wanted to talk about was their anger at this happening of the removal of the two franchises, the two wavelengths. But people were crying. I mean, it was the most extraordinary morning. People rang in and were clearly disturbed and weeping and saying, what's going on?
Now our story gets a bit complicated, but I'll try and speed things up for you. Dame Shirley Porter was running LBC when we lost the license. Her LBC company went into receivership. The new company was headed by Peter Thornton, who used to run LBC, but his company couldn't raise the money to finance the station, so the license was transferred to Waters, who had some money, and then they ran the station for a few years with a number of other owners, including GWR Radio, who decided to bring back the name of LBC. GWR, along with the other shareholders, subcontracted the programmes to ITN. Then in 2002, Chrysalis Radio bought the whole lot and moved us all to West London and poached me from Capital FM. Chris Wright, chairman of Chrysalis.
Well, in my opinion, LBC is one of the great heritage stations in the UK. Indeed, it might even be one of the great heritage stations in the world. Although due to some of the events in its most recent history, it had become slightly flawed. But the great thing really was the major opportunity it presented to take a station which has had such a fundamental role to play in all aspects of running one of the largest cities in the world, and the fact that we could become part of restoring the station to its past glories and even beyond.
Still to come.
Five firemen have died trying to bring forest fires under control.
I beg your pardon, I cannot continue with this bulletin.
Unexpected and definitely unscheduled, stay with me because I'll be taking a sticky dip into the LBC blooper drawer.
LBC, 30 years in the making.
LBC!
You're one to be up for it.
My ears are alive with the sound of music.
There's none better. Nick Ferrari, weekday mornings from 7, starting January the 5th, LBC 97.3. Tuned in to London.
People all over London are finding a new home at LBC 97.3.
I am a convert. I won't tell you what station I'm from or I listen to.
Go on, tell me.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Yes!
LBC 97.3. Tell your friends it's the new place to be in London.
I'm a recent convert to LBC and I love it.
Tuned in to London.
LBC.
LBC. 30 years in the making.
LBC.
I'm Howard Hughes. Now, we pride ourselves on the speed and accuracy of our news reporting. Just ask ex-LBC presenter Barry Jordan, who's prepared for everything except his programme.
Hello, I'm Barry Jordan. The programme's LBC reports. The time, right now, 4:04. Let's get straight into the programme and find out what's been happening whilst I've been getting the programme ready. At the moment, I'm trying to find a piece of paper, and here we are, we've got it. No, we haven't, just stand by. You're still listening to LBC reports, and it's still 2:04. I'll be with you in 1 second, because at the moment, the stories that are coming in thick and fast haven't quite arrived here.
Danny LaRue, well-respected and well-loved star. Perhaps we got him on a bad day.
Would it be said that you're muscling in on the publicity that this show's
called? I don't need publicity, my dear. I'm a very big, successful star. I think you're impertinent. And how dare you be so... Don't switch it off, dear.
I'm not.
I'm used to talking... I am used to talking to amateurs.
Well, you're not talking to one now.
Well, I shall tell you now, my dear. It is years of experience and bloody tears is talking into this piece of crap. I don't need, quote, I am booked up for 3 years, and you only have to find out who wants to book me. I am going all, I'm an international star.
In that case, why are you so touchy about what I just asked you? I think
because
it was a perfectly fair question.
Am I wanting publicity? I don't need.
I asked you if you were muscling in on publicity here.
They answered you. The audience answered you, my dear, not me. They applauded your stupidity and your ignorance and your bad manners.
Well, I think you're being very rude and bad-mannered to me.
Not to you, my dear. I find you inarticulate.
Here's ex-LBC presenter Graham Freer, also having one of those days.
16 children died and 70 were injured when Israeli soldiers tried to rescue them from Palestinian terrorists. The children had been held hostage by 3 Palestinians in a school in the village of Marot. I asked our correspondent in Jerusalem, Daniel Drews, earlier how it happened. I'm sorry, we don't appear to have Daniel Drews at this precise moment. We hope to have that recording a little later.
Oh, dear Graham, I'm sure things will get better later on in the programme. Nick Peters is our next victim. He's struggling to stay professional, but I'm afraid it's all going down the toilet.
A Lincoln museum, flushed with success over their latest exhibition, think they've come up with the answer. A panorama of privies. What an evocative sound. Oh, well, the whole thing started when a number of people discovered they were sitting on porcelain worth preserving, and now the museum... I can't read this thing. Lincolnshire Life has had a collection of old and unusual loos put together. Museum curator Leslie Colsell says... Please excuse me. Give me 2 seconds to... Everybody's laughing at me now. Says the good old toilet is an underestimated, not to say invaluable part of life.
I wonder how Graham Free is getting on.
Earlier today, though, Clive Roslin asked Mr. Greville Janner, the Labour MP and a leading member of the Anglo-Jewish community, for his reaction to today's events.
I think the sooner that these people who use women and children...
Again, my apologies. See if we can get that back in a second.
Never mind, Graham. It'll all turn out well in the end, won't it? Let me hand you over now to Peter Deely.
Diane Stradling reports.
According to the GLC's health panel, the government's action has cost the city more than £30 million in the last 2 years. They say £18 million was lost last year in cutbacks when London health authorities were forced to axe 2,500 jobs and 39 hospitals were faced with closure. The fight to save many of these is still on.
Well, little excitement there from Diane Stradling. We'll get her in a better mood later on.
Dave Wetzel, the chairman of GLC's Transport Committee, and Richard Holm, the editor of the Railway Gazette, but we'd also obviously like to hear from yourselves, 353-8111. Richard, can I turn to you first, because, of course, yesterday's news from Sir Peter Parker, British Rail heading for a deficit of some £140 million. How serious do you think that position really is?
I think it's a very serious one. I'm afraid I'm going to have to tell you and let you into a little secret, which is I'm not editor of the Railway Gazette. This is LBC at its finest. I better reveal who I am, just in case people are getting too confused. I'm president of the Liberal Party, and I thought I was being invited in by you, and I'm very pleased to be here to talk about the situation with public transport. I've got views on it, so I hope I won't waste your time entirely, but I am not the much-fabled editor of the Railway Gazette.
Well, this does prove it's live
radio. There does seem to be a lot of confusion around.
Well, welcome back. I'm Carol Thatcher, standing in this morning for Clive James, and my guest is Australian writer Clive James. I'm sorry, I think I got that wrong.
I liked it the way you said it.
Paul, I'll get your name right in a minute. Clive, would you rather be a critic or a novelist?
I'd rather be called Paul.
And has Graham Freer sorted himself out yet?
Angela Storer asked its chairman, Mr. Harry Moore, how much the situation has changed since 1968, when, according to the report, the hospital was badly overcrowded and staffing was seriously inadequate. We'll see if we can get that report in just a second as well.
Oh, well, it could be worse, couldn't it, Dickie Arbiter?
The man with the sorest feet around here is Dickie Arbiter. I can't see you, Dickie. Are you over there somewhere? Hello, Dickie, are you there? I don't know whether he is. Can I see him from here? Oh, yes, he is there, but we can't hear him. Oh, there you are.
Yes,
oh, Dickie,
yes,
Dickie, where were you? I can now. Carry on, yes. How are your feet? How are your feet, Dickie?
Yes.
You are. Carry on, then. I'll leave it to you.
Right.
He's doing well.
You know, LBC has done some quite extraordinary things over the years, like conducting a phone-in with somebody who wasn't allowed to speak to the callers. Brian Hayes explains.
At a time in the late 80s, when Margaret Thatcher, the then Prime Minister, wanted to take away the oxygen of publicity that she believed that the IRA through Sinn Féin had. And so there was this extraordinary rule that meant that you could not broadcast the direct speech of anybody representing that kind of republicanism, which meant that you had this amazing situation where if Gerry Adams, for instance, said anything on radio or television, radio in our case being the important thing, you could not hear their voice. Somebody else had to do it. We thought a good way to point out the absurdity of this was to do a phone-in. Now, you have to think to yourself, how do you do such a phone-in? Well, what we did, we had Gerry Adams in a studio in Belfast. Then we had somebody in our studio in London, an actor, who merely repeated what Gerry Adams said. So what would happen is a caller would put a question to Gerry Adams. He would answer it at the same time as it was not exactly interpreted, but just repeated by the actor in our studio. And this went on for, you know, whatever length of time we did it for that day, a half hour or an hour. And it was on the same day that there was a big rally at the Dominion Theatre in the West End. So it coincided with a protest against this rather strange and, as you've heard, absurd rule.
Brian Hayes. And then there was the time when Angela Rippon, producer Steve Kite, and engineer Ray Reed popped over to Seville for a week of broadcasting from the Expo exhibition.
We went off to Seville. We met up at the airport, went through, all our luggage went through, and we were just the other side of passport control. And I looked at Steve and the engineer and said, have you put the recorders in your luggage? That's a bit dangerous, isn't it? And the engineer said, no. No, of course I haven't. Steve's got the recorder. And Steve looked at the engineer and said, no, you've got the recorder. At which point we realised we were going to do a week of 3-hour daily programmes, 15 hours of programming, and we didn't have a recorder with us. So we shot into Dixon's in the duty-free, bought a small Sony portable recorder and a pile of cassettes, and then realised that the little microphone was one of those little things that you put on the lapel. So I got some sellotape, and when we got to Spain, to Seville, I sellotaped the little microphone to the top of a pencil and did all of my recordings using this microphone on the end of a pencil.
As you heard from Angela Rippon, sometimes the most embarrassing things are not the events on air, but behind the scenes. Henry Kelly.
There was a fleet of commissioners on a rotating basis in Gough Square, where we were based. And Bishop Desmond Tutu came in to be interviewed one day. And he announced himself, and he was wearing bishop's robes because he was going out to a function across the road in St. Bride's in Fleet Street. And as he went down the steps to go to the studios and turned around, the commissioner got on the telephone to the studio, and his exact words are, "There's some dark chap in a purple frock claiming to be a bishop gone down, wants to talk to Brian Hayes."
That same commissioner, apart from being a bigot, had led a very charmed life. Douglas Cameron.
To set the scene for you, it was in the late 1970s, during the IRA bombing campaign in London. At that time, the IRA were using weed killer bombs. They were very small, but they were terribly lethal. They could kill, and they could seriously damage buildings. And one day, they chucked a bomb at LBC, when we were in Gough Square, just off Fleet Street. Now, the entrance to LBC at that time was hardly pretentious. It had a very small double door with glass in it, and just inside that door was a very small security kiosk, which one man could fit into with difficulty. Now, this commissionaire we were talking about wasn't terribly fond of being in the kiosk. Anybody could come and go as far as he was concerned. He used to nip around the newsroom talking to journalists, and his speciality was making his dinner, which used to take him about 2 hours by the time he'd made it, ate it, and then relaxed a bit after it. One day, when he was having his dinner, there was this tremendous bang. The bomb had gone off. We all rushed to the front of the building to find the door in smithereens, glass shattered all over the place, and the kiosk, the security kiosk, totally destroyed. This man, this commissionaire, may have been dodging his duty that day. He almost certainly dodged death.
Douglas Cameron. Well, here we are. It's October 2003, and that Austin Allegro you bought has been crushed to a cornflake packet-sized block of scrap metal. You've traded your Sinclair pocket calculator for a Dream G mobile phone, and London and life in the capital city have moved on, just like LBC. Chris Wright, Chairman of Chrysalis.
It's very important that we see LBC not as just a reporter of the news, but an instigator of the news. Not just as someone who deals with the issues, but someone who creates the issues. And to be able to campaign for a greater London, for a better city for our population to live in.
Hughes. It's been 30 years in the making, and I'd like to thank you for being part of it.
You know, I used to listen to Capital Kiss 100, you know, but one of the blokes who started working with me said, yeah, he should listen to LBC.
I'm a recent convert to LBC, and I love it. Love it, love it.
I switched to you after Radio 4, and I listened to Melvin Bragg, and I thought, I can't listen to this, and I switched over, and I've been with you ever since.
Needed a decent radio station to keep updated on, and yours was the one.
Can I just say that I've also switched from 5 Live to be with you. I find your programme much more entertaining.
LBC 30 Years in the Making was written and researched by Steve Campen. Thanks to Tony Darkins, Paul Easton and Charlie Rose in the making of this show. The programme was produced by Chris Lowry.
So you've piled on the pounds over Christmas and are looking to slim down. Well, what if I told you that you could lose 25%? The Dagenham Motors Great Ford Sale starts 9 a.m. Saturday, December 27th. Drive away a 53-wedge Focus with delivery mileage from only £9,499 with a massive saving of £3,451. That's 25% off. For your nearest Dagenham Motors, call 0800-86-9000. That's 0800-86-9000. Sale starts December 27th. Losing pounds has never been so easy.
LBC 97.3. Come through the jams with our bird's eye view on all the road and motorway hotspots. The LBC Sky Patrol flying 1,500 feet above London every weekday morning. The fastest way to work with Isha.com, bringing you cheaper car insurance online. LBC 97.3. Tuned in to London. LBC 97.3.
Howard Hughes.
Well, a few weeks ago, the boss came up to me and he said, Howard, I've got a wonderful career opportunity for you. And I thought, I wonder what this is. Could this be The Breakfast Show? Could it be reporting live from the United States? What could it be? And he said, Howard, I'd like you to do 3 continuous hours of Howard's World on Christmas night. I said, okay. So what I've got for you in the next 3 hours is some of the great people we've talked to over the last year on Howard's World, how those people are spending Christmas. We're going to link up with them. Plus, we've got some classic blunders, cock-ups and bloopers from the world of radio, all coming next.
This is LBC 97.3, London.
It's 7 o'clock. Good evening, I'm Richard Midson. A man's been charged with the murder of his disabled father in Eastcote in North London. 21-year-old Jonathan Alexander Keane will appear at Uxbridge Magistrates tomorrow morning. Father of 4, David, was found stabbed to death early on Sunday at his flat in the town. Another man arrested last night has been released without charge. An airliner has crashed into the Atlantic Ocean. It failed to take off properly as it left the runway in the West African nation of Benin. It hit a building and burst into flames. At least 30 bodies are reported to have been washed up on a nearby beach. The Boeing plane was on its way to Beirut. Reporter Runa Amin is in Beirut for us.
The flight was carrying mostly Lebanese passengers. It crashed as it was departing the Benin state. They say it crashed into the sea. They still don't have any numbers regarding the number of dead. They are concerned it's probably by the dozen.
British scientists have finished tests on a suspected BSE-infected cow from America.